I finally gave Cadillac Engineering a 2 weeks notice and I left General Motors. And prior to doing this, of course, I had my interview with George W. Walker, Industrial Designers in Detroit, and Ted Ornus, my friend who was in school with me, was a designer with George W. Walker, and he'd spoken to George about me, and I had my interview with George, and I showed him all my products, refrigerators and radios and stoves and so on and so on, and George said, "What, aren't you the Joe Orris that worked in the Cadillac studio and with the Cadillacs?" And I said, "That's right. I worked in the Cadillac studio with Bill Mitchell." And I said, "I just didn't bring any cars over because I wanted to show you industrial design products. And furthermore," I said, "I worked on so many cars that I decided I'd like to try my hand at the products." And needless to say, we struck a very close rapport instantly with George W. Walker. And I was hired right then and there, and with a salary increase, and I started as one of the designers for George W. Walker. But what finally helped change my mind for me to get into the industrial design business were two or three things. During the war years, I reflected over my time at General Motors in the design office there, and I thought of the way the designers were all let go when the war began. This, I thought, was a terrible error on General Motors' part to let highly trained, capable people go arbitrarily just because they were switching gears from peacetime to wartime engineering. I thought that many of the men could have fitted instantly into the wartime engineering or what have you, because designers as a whole are highly creative and very capable of fitting into engineering and so forth.
Sure.
So that struck in my mind and I never forgot it. And the other thing that I didn't forget was that although General Motors design office was a wonderful place to get the training in automotive design, I was also aware, and I never had any problems at General Motors, never had any problems with Bill Mitchell in design or any place, but I was aware of the giant machine. And I knew that, and I was very impatient, and I knew I'd had to go through the steps, through the ladder, starting with the General Motors School. I knew that I had to go through the ladder system and through the studio system and finally work as, if I was successful, be a head of a studio. But I knew that the time would be dragged out. And particularly since I had started through the system from the General Motors School, I knew it would take a certain number of years. And I was rather impatient, and I decided that I would like to try my hand at industrial design, because that's where I had really trained in school, in industrial design. And although I liked cars, I still had in my mind that it would be wonderful to design products and automobiles. So I decided to join George W. Walker, where I knew both of them were available, and he had established himself as a national designer and with world repute.
Can you elaborate on that, Mr. Walker? By this time in 1945,
yes,
had established a, as you say, a national reputation.
Yes.
What were his products and what were his strengths?
His products that he had worked on, George W. Walker had a national repute. He had the Packard account.
In what respect?
He helped design the Packard Clipper.
Ah.
The original Packard Clipper, mm-hmm, which was a tremendous success.
Both artistically?
Both artistically and the inside and outside, the appearance of the Packard Clipper. Now, he did have, working for him, a designer that worked on his team of designers that was doing the major design input for the George W. Walker office, and his name was Don Mortrude. And Don Mortrude was a General Motors studio head. And Don Mortrude had one of the special project studios. And he was a very, very capable, qualified automobile designer. But he was also a very capable and qualified product man as a designer.
Can you spell his last name?
Mortrude. Mortrude, I believe, Don. And Don Mortrude also, later on, had the Chriscraft account for many years.
As an industrial designer?
As an industrial designer.
What special studio was he head of?
Well, I don't know the exact name of the studio that Don Mortrude headed, but it was one of the special project studios Advanced Studios at General Motors.
Fine.
At the time. But Don Mortrude worked for George W. Walker, and he also worked for George W. Walker when George received the Nash Kelvinator account, which included all of the white goods and, of course, the Nash car. And Don Mortrude also worked for George on this account. Now, when I joined George W. Walker, I didn't realize it until my first interview with George W. Walker that he too had graduated from the same high school in Cleveland that I had, which was East Technical High School, and he had gone to the Cleveland School of Art and graduated from the Cleveland School of Art and worked, and he graduated, I believe he majored in illustration and commercial art. And then he finally opened up his own office and got into the design world.
So I should recall that he had both proximity to the GM building.
And he had close proximity to the GM building and became close friends with GM personnel, Ernie Breech, particular, and other General Motors people, and he was a highly successful designer, belonged to Bloomfield Hills Country Club, and knew the General Motors people, and knew all of the automotive people, and I thought that he would be the firm to join with. And of course, he later told me that when I joined, that he too graduated from Cleveland, and that, of course, just cemented our foundation all the more solidly. And we were very, very close together from the first day I joined till the day he retired as vice president from design section at Ford Motor Company.
And now, of course, you had Ted Ornus as a
Ted Ornus as well. Was there cementing bonds for me. And then while I was at the office at George W. Walker's, I introduced Elwood Engel to George W. Walker.
Where had you come? Come across Mr. Engel?
Engel and I were in the GM school together.
Ah, good.
And we graduated together. I was Elwood Engel's best man at his wedding. And during the years that Elwood was in the service, I was corresponding with Elwood. And incidentally, I too was called up for service at the end, near the end of the war period. But I was deferred from service as a 4F because I had just had an operation in that same year, and I was considered 4F due to the surgery that I had. But I kept correspondence with Elwood all the time he was in the service, and he wrote and said that he was considering going back to General Motors or going back into industrial design, and I hurriedly wrote him a letter and told him that if he was interested, I would do my utmost to get him into the George W. Walker staff. And what a wonderful outfit it was, and it was indeed, for both Elwood Engel and myself. Now, the operation at George W. Walker with me was that George W. Walker would take me to the clients, introduce me to the clients, and then I would service the account. And I would deal directly with the people responsible with the products at the clients, either the chief engineer, the vice president, or the president of the company. And I would return to the office and get the information as to what the product was to be and so forth from both my boss, George W. Walker, and the chief engineer or the vice president. And I would prepare the designs and service the designs with the client, prepare the working drawings, and this is where my 4 years of engineering came in as a real assist, because not only was I able to prepare my design work, my final renderings, but give the engineering department working drawings so that they could build their models. And then in addition to that, with my engineering background, I was able to look at the final tools and give a critique on the tools for the highlights and so forth prior to their going into production with their tools. And I serviced several accounts that way for George W. Walker.
Remember some of them?
And oh yes, they were the Eureka vacuum sweeper. And I serviced Baker Rawlang in Cleveland, Ohio, for George W. Walker, and they handled industrial tractors and all kinds of tractor equipment and all kinds of truck equipment. And I serviced
Cockshut
from Canada.
Farm equipment,
tractors and farm equipment that needed aesthetic work done, and stoves.
Which were part of George's strengths.
Which were part of, and refrigerators,
yes,
with Admiral. But shortly after joining George W. Walker, I would watch the designers that were working on the Nash account. And of course, they knew that I had been with Cadillac Design and Cadillac Engineering, and they said, "Well, what I thought of this or that in their proposals for Nash Kelvinator," and occasionally I would say, "No, I don't think I would do it that way. I would do it this way," and I would sit down and knock out a sketch and give it to the designer, and this is what I would do. Or I would knock out some sketches and crumple them up and just roughly throw them in the wastebasket, not knowing that George W. Walker was watching me with my conversation with the designers as to what I would do with the Nash car line And I wasn't aware that he was going to the waste baskets and dragging out my sketches from the waste basket or from the designers that I just thrown around. And pretty soon he put me to work on the Nash account. And before long, Nash Calvinator asked that they retain me on the Nash account as their chief car liaison from the office. So soon after joining George W. Walker in to do products, I was totally involved with the Nash Calvinator account, and I was up to my ears in car design again.
In this instance, the smaller companies relied, the smaller automotive companies relied on contract design work.
The smaller companies like Nash Calvinator relied on George W. Walker and Packard for a lot of their design input. And of course, George W. Walker had a tremendous design staff, and he did a tremendous job for both Packard and Nash Calvinator. Now, when I serviced the Nash account, at that time, I also brought in to the George W. Walker group or team, of course, both Elwood Engel and the Charlie Stobar brothers. Now, the Charlie Stobar brothers were modelers at General Motors at the time, and Charlie Stobar, I knew from working at Cadillac prior to the war, was one of the lead modelers at General Motors. He was the star modeler at General Motors. Yep. And Leonard Stobar.
They're clay modelers.
And I talked to George about them, and soon they were doing our products. They were moonlighting for George W. Walker at night and on weekends. Mm-hmm. And during the week, of course, they worked for General Motors. But
no
conflict of interest whatsoever, because all of the designs that we prepared at George W. Walker were unique to our office, and they were unique for Nash Calvinator at the time. And again, I was just there at the right time, because my 4 years engineering came into such good stead. It just supplemented all of my previous training that I had at Cadillac Design Center, that it all dovetailed together, and I was able to give Nash Calvinator the sketches, the full-size drawings, the detailed drawings, and I was able to give the Charlie Stobar modeling brothers the right drawings so that they could make the models. So I serviced Nash Calvinators with the drawings and the final models from George W. Walker.
Charlie's brother was named
Leonard Stobar. Now, a strange aside, the account, which I'll get to a little later, George W. Walker account did get the Ford account after the Nash account. And I remember, as one of the projects we worked on for the Ford account was the small bus that was used around Greenfield Village. They wanted to update this bus. And the bus people from Ford Motor came over, and they wanted to meet the designer of the bus that they had approved at Ford Motor to go ahead with. And they came over and to see the designer and to talk to George business and about the bus as it was going at the office. Well, the chief engineer, the person responsible for the bus at Ford Motors, said to George W. Walker, "You mean that young kid is the designer of our bus?" Uh-huh. And George Walker said, "Well, he's not a young kid. He's in his 30s. Mm-hmm. And yes, but he also worked 4 years in engineering at Cadillac Engineering during the war, so he knows what he's doing." Mm-hmm. Anyhow, they were flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. And
had they contracted the bus design out to George W. Walker Associates?
Yes, mm-hmm. they did, and we designed the bus for him. Mm-hmm. And also, we, of course, were instrumental and designed the first 49 Ford
right.
for him.
Which we'll get to in some detail
right.
later, yes. You mentioned that this relationship became an enduring one, the triumvirate of George Walker, Elwood Engel, and Joe Orris.
Mm-hmm.
What was Mr. Engel doing at this time at the Walker firm?
When Elwood Engel joined the George W. Walker design firm, he too was a designer and was responsible for various accounts. And George W. Walker had, I would venture, probably 20 odd accounts mm-hmm. that he was servicing.
Incredible variety of products.
For a variety of products.
Yeah.
And there were a total of about, I'd have to add them up fast here, about half a dozen or so designers on the staff mm-hmm. of George W. Walker designers. The designers came up with the designs in the office. We dovetailed these designs with George W. Walker, and George W. Walker then serviced these designs with us, with the clients, or he would turn over the accounts to the individual designers and they would service their own accounts with the firms. But George W. Walker was the head, of course, of the design firm with the national and international name. He was very similar to Raymond Loewy and Donald Deskey and so on.
How do you spell that, Mr. Esky's name?
Deskey, D-E-S-K-Y, mm-hmm. and Raymond Loewy.
Mm-hmm. Right. At this point, you talk about an introduction to Ford. Or at least a partial one in servicing the Ferguson tractor account.
Well, yes. Prior to George W. Walker receiving the Ford account, one of his accounts was a Ferguson tractor account. And I serviced this account.
Mm-hmm. At this time, was Ferguson connected with Ford?
Ferguson was not connected with Ford Motor at this time. He had left Ford. He was connected with Ford Motor prior to the time we had the Ferguson tractor account. And he was hired by Mr. Ford from England. And Mr. Ferguson had certain ideas relative to what the tractor business should be and relative to what the supplementary tractor components should be relative to farming.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he had his own ideas. And Mr. Ford and Ferguson dovetailed together with the Ford tractor.
Seemed to be a natural alliance.
It was a natural alliance, but it didn't last. Mr. Ferguson left Ford Motor and went to England where he had his own Ferguson tractor. And then with that opening, we also serviced the first Ferguson tractor that he wanted facelifted. And George W. Walker received a Ferguson account from England. And naturally, I serviced the Ferguson tractor account. I never went to England, but I prepared all of the tractor drawings and designs for the Ferguson tractor, and I prepared all the full-size drawings, the engineering drawings, and I prepared all the prep drawings for the model making. Leonard Stobar and Charlie Stobar made the final model for the Ferguson tractor. And I also recruited my engineers, my friends from engineering at Cadillac Engineering, to do the final detailing of the surface development for the Ferguson tractor. Mm-hmm.
And the chief among them were?
The gentleman that did the final detailing for the Ferguson tractor, his name was Walter Kirsten. And he was a Cadillac engineer who did the final surface development for the Cadillac cars at Cadillac Engineering. So I made close friends, both in engineering and design, every place. So, and I utilized all the help I could get. It was very interesting, but when George W. Walker went to Europe with the proposal to present to Ferguson tractor, and the tractor had preceded George. Mm-hmm. It was sent to England.
You sent a fully operational?
A full operational tractor was sent to England. Mm-hmm. George was received with an indifference, I would say, mildly. Ferguson was totally disenchanted with the tractor design that I had prepared through the office, and totally disenchanted with George W. Walker's effort. And he said, "George, we want you to come to our meeting and listen to our board what they think this tractor should look like versus the tractor you sent us." And Ferguson headed the meeting, and at the end of the table, if I recall George telling me, he said, George told me that Ferguson stood up as chairman and asked each member around the table what they thought of this tractor, and they all said that it should look like a Rolls Royce. It looked like the Rolls Royce, Ferguson's Rolls Royce that had just driven in with his wife. It should have that kind of an appearance for his tractor. At which George W. Walker was so infuriated with this charade, it was a charade going around the table, that George W. Walker said, well, they didn't really need his services as a designer, and he was sorry, but if they wanted a Rolls-Royce front end to their tractor, they should hire an English designer, and they could probably get that, or why don't they copy the Rolls-Royce front end and put it on their tractor. And with that, he left the meeting. Came back to the States, and of course I was a little disappointed that the tractor wasn't accepted by Ferguson, and I felt a little bit chagrined that all my effort went down the drain, and I also felt embarrassed that the office design was not accepted.
But didn't faze
George W. Walker at all. But interestingly enough, as an aside, this theme, which was the center spinner, eventually became the theme for the first tractor that we as consultants did for Ford Motor. And again, I used that same identical theme that I used on Ferguson tractor, what that was not accepted by Ferguson, and I modified it, varied it, and used it as the theme for the Ford tractor. And it was a highly successful tractor, and became a benchmark amongst the tractors of the time.
That's interesting. Mr. Ferguson's products in later years adhered fairly closely to your original design.
I don't know if it did or didn't, but all I know is that he didn't accept the theme, and he said it should look like a Rolls Royce, and...
Well, he never did.
And George W. Walker left in a hurry and came back to the States, totally disgruntled, with jet lag.
I can imagine. At this point,
well, I guess shortly after the Ferguson account problem with the tractor in England, George W. Walker's office received the Ford Motor account to come up with designs for the 1949 Ford.
What do you think, can you elaborate on how that came about?
Yes, it came about because at the time, Ford Motor had a product to go as the 1949 Ford. But the new management at Ford Motor, Mr. Beach and Mr. Ford, Mr. Crusoe, and Youngren, they all thought that the product was too heavy and too large for a Ford car, and it would have been prohibitive from a cost point of view to produce this car as a Ford.
This was 1945, and the current or the then head of
this was 1946 and a half,
okay,
and into 47.
Oh, I see. Of
and 46, and the car was intended for 49, and had Ford Motor, we were told, have come out with that original product that was designed at the time under the original Ford design team headed by Bob Gregory. The car would have been too costly to produce, mm-hmm, and would have cost Ford Motor a lot of money. So we were asked to contribute ideas for the 1949 Ford. Mm-hmm. So the George W. Walker office opened up the design problem to the whole office, and we all contributed ideas for this car. In addition to that, George W. Walker's office also had some outside designers that were not in the Ford, in the George W. Walker office direct payroll, contribute ideas to the design office of George W. Walker that we could evaluate and submit along with our ideas to Ford Motor for the 1949 Ford. There were ideas submitted. I do recall some were submitted, if I recall, by a design team that was composed of Grissinger and his partner, and they contributed some. There were some designs that were contributed by a designer named Khalil, and
Dick Khalil,
and his ideas were also put into the hopper, and Mr. Ford prepared, Mr. Walker prepared a large portfolio that he submitted to the Ford management, very professionally done, and a theme was picked from the set of drawings to start the full-size clay development of. And this theme was primarily the 1949 Ford beginning. Now, the car body main theme was derived from the renderings and the models that were submitted from the office. And when the car was finally approved, the Ford car from George W. Walker was approved with a proviso that additional work be done to the car's front end and back end, which after approval these were done. But I could go back now and give you the details a little bit more in sequence. After the approval of the car theme, Elwood Engel and I were assigned to the development studio that was set up in the original design section at Ford's, right across the street from a Greenfield Village.
This was the engineering laboratory.
This was the engineering laboratory, and we were given a separate area to develop our model, and we had posted guard outside our door so that no other person in design from the original design Ford team could see what we were doing. And they in turn had guards posted at their end, so we too could not see what they were doing. So we progressed with our model, and I handled the development of the model for George W. Walker's office to ensure that the model was going as to the theme that was selected, and I kept George W. Walker informed to any changes that were required due to package or mechanical or manufacturing reasons, that adjustments that had to be made. And I worked very closely with the engineers that were assigned to us from Ford Motor in the studio to interpret the design properly.
The body engineers.
The body engineers, and to ensure that the clay work was representative of the theme as was intended. And George Walker was completely aware of every detail that was happening to the car, and although I spent the full day and late into the evenings on the car at Ford Motor, I'd also have enough time to brief George in the mornings or late afternoon and return to, back to Ford to continue the operation.
Excuse me, prior to this, prior to the approval, there had been set up, perhaps by Mr. Breach and Mr. Ford, young Henry Ford, Henry Ford II, a sort of a competition, was there not?
Yes, the competition was set up between George W. Walker's staff in his office and his design input versus the design input of Gregory, mm-hmm. Bob Gregory's group.
And the resident designer.
Who was the resident chief designer for Ford Motor. And the instructions were given that neither group would see the other's work. And the only person that would travel between the two studios was the chief body, was the chief engineer and vice president of engineering, Harold Youngman. Now I felt towards the end that this was violated a little bit in respect that Harold Youngren did bring in Bob Gregory to see our model just before we were going to paint it. It was finishing up. And Bob Gregory must have been in about the same position because we were both shooting for the same completion date. But I felt that inasmuch as we didn't get a request to see their model, that Harold Youngren, having brought Bob Gregory and gave him a preview of our effort and the little violation of the original pact that was set up the Ford designers and our designers from George W. Walker's group.
We're consulting. Do you think there was any, not only intention, but do you think there was any way that Mr. Gregory could alter his clay model to conform more closely to yours, or?
Well, at the time, I thought of that, whether he could adjust his model, but I reported this to Mr. Walker and at the time, but I felt that there probably wasn't any time that any radical adjustment could be made due to the time element involved.
This was unethical.
It would be too much of a change, and most likely it totally couldn't be accommodated. And as it turned out, the models were dramatically different in concept, and the Ford management group, Mr. Ford, Mr. Breach, and L.D. Crusoe, and Mr. Youngren, on the final analysis approved the George W. Walker proposed 1949 Ford.
What were the differences between the two proposals?
Well, they were major.
Mm-hmm.
The major difference between the two cars were primarily that the 49 Ford eliminated the heavy belt line,
mm-hmm.
and where the hood wrapped around the doors before the lower fenders began. There was a first roll from the window down, and then the main body roll. And that was the traditional General Motors approach to body design.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an industry general approach. But the Ford 49 Ford eliminated the heavy belt line hood wraparound around the A-pillar.
Which had been a holdover cliche from pre-war days.
Holdover from previous years and was still prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
When the 49 Ford was introduced.
So this is a real
now,
picture,
when the 49 Ford was introduced, shortly afterwards, Studebaker came out with a similar approach to the body, where the hood was washed out before it wrapped around the A-pillar. And it was just a small belt wrapping around the A-pillar, primarily as a molding for the window frames.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the big difference between the two car lines. And of course, there were other differences. The plan view of the Gregory model was more squared off, and the Ford model was more aerodynamic in the sense that the back end pulled in a little bit, and the front end pulled in a little bit. And the body sides were a little more aerodynamic than the Gregory model. The Gregory model was more traditional in its approach. And it also appeared a little heavier. And the other main difference was that with the hood, the way it was designed, it blended down into the front end of the grill work,
mm-hmm.
and integrated into the grill a lot more thoroughly than the traditional grills and hoods of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a forerunner of aerodynamics in a sense.
Yes, yours was the first car to, with the exception of certain one or two classic cars, the first mass production model to utilize a rounded soft, smooth approach.
Right.
A less boxy.
It was a less boxy car. There, more aerodynamic. But by the same token, we had some very stringent requirements in the package. And one of the peculiarities of the 49 Ford was that we had to design the deck lid and the deck to be able to accommodate the milk cans in a vertical position. And that was our criteria for or setting up the interior space of the deck lid was a request from engineering to be able to stack the milk cans vertically, just as much as the golf bag has always been a criteria to make sure that the golf bag fits into a trunk.
Well, you did an admirable job because, as you well remember, the step-up is quite low,
right?
Quite convenient.
Now, I do remember Mr. Ford, Henry Ford the First, Mr. Henry Ford the First, came into the studio when our model was prepared and looked at our model, and it was had been painted a beautiful tan beige color, and very light. And Mr. Ford walked around the car with his wife and Ford management, and he seemed to approve of the car very much. And I was quite concerned, wondering if he would really like the new approach to the Ford car and that he had fathered. But after the Ford was approved, it was approved with two contingencies: that additional work be done to the taillights, and additional work and new thoughts be given to the grill.
Before you get into that.
So the grill was not approved, nor was the taillight approved.
Before we get into that in some detail, which I'd like to, and this may not be the place to ask you, but I want to throw you a curve here. The original model, the original plaster model, there have been two or three accounts of exactly who fabricated this, or perhaps it's the first model you did for the production car. But I have read accounts by Mr. Holden Cotto, who talks about his being approached by Richard Khalil to assist him in making a 3/8 model.
Yeah, a quarter model
for the car. And Mr. Cotto says that he was at the time at Studebaker. Mr. Khalil was on your staff, the Walker staff, and he brought him some sketches, some design sketches.
And who brought them?
Mr. Khalil brought them to Mr. Cotto.
Oh, yes.
And said, I need help in putting together a plaster model. And according to Mr. Cotto's account, he and Mr. Khalil worked on Mr. Khalil's kitchen table several nights to complete this scale model. Can you expand or elaborate or confirm that in any way?
Well, first of all, I don't know what Mr. Khalil presented to Bob Cotto. And additionally, I don't know how much Bob Cotto contributed. And in addition, I don't know where a model was prepared. I can only tell you that as Walker's, one of the designers at Walker's staff, we prepared our own designs, and I can tell you that yes, I believe Dick Khalil came in with a model, and the model was very similar to some of the ideas we too had been submitting in design form, and this was a strong consideration. And I can tell you that the bodywork of that model was in a similar vein to the development of the 49 Ford. Now, I am saying the bodywork,
right,
which includes from the belt down the sheet metal and the greenhouse. Might have been similar, but I can't affix it that tightly because the greenhouse, we did have additional work to do with the four-door entry part of it. And I don't believe that the quarter size model that Dick brought in was that representative.
It was at a very early stage in
yes.
the development of these.
And so I would say yes, the Khalil model was a strong contributor to helping formulate the theme of the main body sections.
Right, body section.
But that's where it ended. Mm-hmm. And the 49 Ford utilized that model plus other designs that were similar as a composite to develop the 49 Ford. And we kept Mr. Walker aware of the direction as Mr. Walker had selected, Ford management had selected with Mr. Walker, and I was requested at the time by Mr. Walker to ensure the development of the model reflected what management had picked out as a general theme for the 49 Ford. Now, does this answer your question?
Yes.
Other than that, I really do not know where the model came from, or whether Dick Khalil produced it, or if he had collaborated with it, or to what extent. I have never asked Bob Cotto about his direct contribution to that car, and I don't think he's asked me, and Dick Khalil never told me per se how the model got to the office or whether he had developed it. I understood he had developed it or may have developed it in collaboration with somebody else, but as I mentioned before, Mr. Walker did hire from outside other designers, and Dick Khalil was one of them, and also Buzz Grissinger and his partner contributed some ideas
they
to
were independent,
yes, to the design effort. But it did boil down to the main point is that the contributions from George W. Walker's office were the ones that were selected to be developed in competition with the proposals from the Ford group. And when the two models were completed, the George W. Walker's model was selected as the 49 Ford with additional work to be done to the back end and to the front end. And with that charge, we then proceeded after approval to modify the back end and to do considerable work to the front end to make it more acceptable to Ford management.
I think you've clarified that judiciously to the point where we can conclude that the Khalil Cotto collaboration was very early in the design process.
Was very early, prior to the full-size development.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I will say that little model that was submitted by Dick Khalil mm-hmm. was a strong factor in the determining the original concept, or to help determine the original concept of the original 49 Ford body design, along with similar concepts that Ford, George W. Walker submitted to Ford in design form. There weren't many models, there were two or three models submitted, and Khalil's model was one of them.
Oh, you had other.
Oh yes, there were other clay models submitted.
Models, uh-huh.
Yes,
and they were a collaborative effort also among the staff.
They were primarily from the Ford, from the George W. Walker design office.
Now you're being rather modest about your own input into this. Can you sketch exactly what contributions you made to the final design?
Well,
Mr. Walker gives you a very, very, very much credit. Final design, by the way.
First of all, the model theme was selected by the Ford Management Group, along with Mr. Walker. Mr. Walker then asked me to guide the full-size development of the Ford 49 Ford car, and to ensure that it would be to package, and to ensure that it would be properly worked out for engineering reasons, manufacturing reasons, and cost reasons, and of course, most importantly, to adhere to the selected theme. And to that theme of bodywork, yes, I too submitted, along with Elwood Engel and other designers from the office, many designs pertaining to the Ford 49 car.
It was a true now, team effort.
Pardon? It was a team effort.
Right.
And Dick Khalil also was present at the time in the studio while this car was being developed. And I do recall that Dick did once or twice want to increase, for instance, the length of the car. And the immediately, I alerted Walker, George W. Walker, that this shouldn't be done because we'd be falling in the same trap that the original Ford proposal fell into, which was namely size. Because with each inch that you added weight and cost. And so I tenaciously held to the 195-inch overall width. Overall length of the car,
package.
Which was the original package.
Now, when you say package, of course, you understand, and I'm beginning to understand, that this was the engineering, the body engineering
package. Body engineering package.
Yes,
but, of course, it had nothing to do with the aesthetics around that package.
Yes.
And the only other part of the package that was the engineering contribution that was mandatory was this milk can deal. And we had to adhere to that. But after the car was approved, Elwood Engel did contribute then his theme of the taillights. The original Ford, 1949 Ford model, had a vertical taillight. And the original front end was not of the spinner type. Are you going to ask me a question? I know.
Fine. I wonder if you could develop for us, Mr. Oros, the reason for the dramatic breakthrough in automotive styling that, that you and your associates with the George W. Walker firm accomplished with the 49 Ford. It had been quite a break with tradition, had it not?
Yes, it had. And in a sense, the 49 Ford was also derived and influenced by the aircraft of World War II. And that is evident, of course, in the front end. And it is also evident in the clean line of the Ford car, the 49 Ford. It was different in respect that it didn't have a lot of bulbous sections. It had a nice tumble home,
and
a smooth line to it.
What does tumble home mean?
It means the curvature of the boat's hull, the way a sailboat rolls under and over. And that is called a tumble.
Is that a term, a nautical design?
It's a
term?
Nautical term.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the aircraft industry and had its effect on the whole automotive industry, of course, with the fins and with the Ford car, with the taillights eventually, and with the start of the 1949 Ford front end. Mm-hmm. Now, Ford management, on approving the 49 Ford originally, wanted something more distinctive that would give it an instant hallmark so that it could cry out to the world, this is a new Ford car. So we then went to work. And all my tenure at Cadillac Engineering this time came to good assistance, because I had spent a lot of time designing Venturi sections for the tanks to repel the shells from entering the engine compartment, yet permitting all of the air to go in. So with the Venturi, then we decided to, in mind,